This show is powered by BL3P, the lightning-enabled European...
Connect the build.
Michael Opago, Bavaria.
Writing a book can be quite of a challenge and takes a lot of effort. Assuming a moderate pace of writing and a dedicated effort, some authors might be able to complete a book of 88 pages in a matter of weeks, especially if they are writing full-time. Others may take longer, especially if they have other commitments or if they prefer a more measured writing pace. Did you finish the writing of your book in a couple of weeks?
Yes.
Did you buy your Tesla with Bitcoin when it was still possible?
No.
The Myers-Briggs type indicator is a psychological tool used to measure personality preferences based on four dichotomies: extroversion, introversion, sensing, intuition versus thinking versus feeling, and judging versus perceiving. Is it true that according to this model, you're a commander?
Yes.
Bayern Munich is a German football club founded in 1900. Bayern Munich is one of the most successful football clubs globally. They have won numerous domestic and international titles, including multiple Bundesliga championships and Champions League titles. Do you think they will win the Champions League title this year?
No.
Do you prefer München over Salzburg?
Yes.
Konnichiwa means hello in Japanese and sayonara means bye-bye. You must know this because you speak Japanese, right?
Yes.
Weisswurst is a traditional Bavarian sausage made from minced veal and pork back bacon. It's flavored with parsley, mace, onions, lemon, mace, ginger, and cardamom. Weisswurst is usually boiled and served with sweet mustard. Is this your favorite sausage?
No.
Is it true that you love cats over dogs?
Yes.
Do you use your solar panels to mine Bitcoin?
Not yet.
Are you Satoshi Nakamoto?
No.
Welcome to the Connect the World weekly podcast. I'm Edward.
And I'm Steph. We are ready to take you with us into the beautiful world of the Lightning Network.
Enjoy the ride.
This is episode 99 of Connect the World, and this show is made possible by our friends from BL3P. Thank you guys for helping us out to complete our mission. And if you also want to help us out, then head over to our Twitter account, subscribe at our YouTube channel, or of course, you can enter our Telegram group where you can ask us anything. And a donation is, of course, always welcome.
Conectează lumea.
Welcome, Michael.
Yeah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Or do I need to say konnichiwa? But I saw on the screen that you made this gesture. You speak a very little Japanese, right?
Yes.
A little bit.
But how come? Where did you...
Most of it. Yeah, I worked for several Japanese companies and been to Japan several times. So I learned a little bit. I took lessons, but as I said, I've already forgot most of it again.
Yeah, but I guess, learning a different European language might be a little easier because it's more of the same, right? But Japanese is totally different. So if you want to learn it well, you have to speak it very often, and that might be a bit of a problem, right?
Yeah, I think actually I purchased only two licenses, and I tried learning multiple languages, but in the end, the only thing that sticks is English and German.
Yeah. I can imagine, man. But how was it for you in your job? Was it mandatory to learn Japanese, or was it just something you would love to?
Helpful.
Yeah. Okay.
At least you have the basics if you're traveling there.
Yeah, sure. So it wasn't related to the job. It was more related to you traveling to Japan.
Yes. And I mean, working with Japanese colleagues.
Ah, okay. Okay, cool. And you wrote a book. We are going to talk about it. And Edward asks you, did you finish your book in a couple of weeks? How long did it take to finish the book?
Yeah, I mean, I paused because the writing is not what took me so long, but really, I wanted it to be very short and precise. So I spent much more time shortening it than writing it.
Ah, okay. Cool. That might be difficult.
I'm curious about one other question, because I asked you if you use solar panels to mine Bitcoin. Of course, we were curious if you're doing that, and you said not yet. So you have plans, right?
Yes, I have plans. I mean, nerd miner don't count.
No.
The thing is, I'm actually continuously upgrading my home.
Yeah.
And right now I mostly use solar to charge the cars, but I still have in the summer I have something left over. So I'm still figuring out what the best setup is and really how much makes sense, because originally I didn't think I would have as much energy left over as I have. So
yeah. Because if you're saying you have more than you consume, then you can have two Teslas and charge them both, right?
Yeah, and actually I drive a Tesla and my wife drives a Fiat Doblo.
Okay. also electric, yeah.
Yeah, she's the opposite to me in regard of cars. I like all these features, software, and she likes a car that you just turn on and drive, and that's it.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Yeah,
but you still have some energy left in summertime.
Yeah, in the summertime, even with two cars, I'm not able to use everything that's coming amazing from the sun.
Ah, okay, cool. Okay,
It sounds like a so obvious solution, right? Because it's so. So sad that we can't use it, and so I think mining is could be the next thing for this case, because I mean, a lot of people have the same problem.
To be honest, I have actually a patent for an integrated system that integrates solar and other things over roads. I patented that before I got into Bitcoin. Yeah. And one of the aspects that turned me on about Bitcoin when I started to really understand it was exactly that, this, because energy storage is expensive and always will be, and to really make the most out of renewable, to make it most economical, what you do is not like here in Germany, unfortunately, our government thinks really like have so much storage that you can basically, if this is your need curve, mm-hmm. they want to have basically as much storage curve that you can basically, even if there's several weeks of no wind and sun, you can really take that in. But I think it's exactly the right strategy is exactly the other way around. You build as much as makes economical sense, which is in the peak times much more than you need, but in the lower times in the winter, much less than you need. So you obviously yeah. need other energy sources for that time, which moves the curves up again and gives you more headroom in the summer. And what you need to do with that headroom is obviously something that's valuable and very flexible. And the only technology is Bitcoin for that. I mean, many said it's hydrogen, and maybe this is a small portion, but in the end, there's just so many problems in efficiency with hydrogen and also with really sensibly using hydrogen in the economy. So there's always this need for that fast user of energy that easily monetizes it, that doesn't need any infrastructure to run, really, that you can place right next to a wind or solar park. And Bitcoin is really the only technology for that, and it's yeah. perfect for that use case.
Yeah, you yeah. only need a internet connection and electricity, obviously, and you can get going. But and I think indeed the monetization part is what it makes most interesting, because you could also put in some data centers or something, but they're yeah useless in a way. And Bitcoin gives you money, so it's like the perfect combination, right?
Yeah, I mean, data centers is not that easy actually, because a standard data center that's not just Bitcoin mining, they usually also need a very high bandwidth internet connection, yeah. And lots of other things. And a Bitcoin miner, the few megabytes per block, right? You don't even really need internet. You can use other radio connections for that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I think there was someone who was streaming blocks through radio frequency, right? So that's crazy.
I saw
it, but I didn't. Yeah,
I also heard it.
It was a while ago, so I don't know what the name was of the guy, but he tried it out and it worked. So that's crazy. Hey, let's talk about. We're going to talk about OpaGo. It's a company you founded, or co-founded, I must say. And the book you wrote, and you also translated one, so we can also touch on that. But it has to be in a 21 minutes, Michael. So if you are ready, we would really love to enter the 21 minutes.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. Connect the word.
Yeah, Michael, because you released your latest book with the title Bitcoin Nation, how sound money can fix democracy. And on the 15th anniversary of the Bitcoin white paper last year, how do you think the landscape of Bitcoin has evolved since the white paper's publication, and how does it relate to the themes you handled in your book?
Well, I mean, it's crazy how much changed, right? The block size wars, Lightning's invention, all the other layer twos, how just Lightning progressed in the last few months. But really, the book is about what's coming. And the interesting part is we're still in that flat part of the S-curve, right? And normally, most technologies, once they reach 10% adoption, they get to 90% within about a decade. And we are not sure really how much adoption we have in Bitcoin, but it's probably not 10% yet. So really the interesting stuff happens after we reach these 10%. And the big question is, when will that be?
Yeah. And what was for you the main reason for to write this book?
There were two main reasons, actually. One goes back to the book I translated, and really trying to make people understand how important money is for society. I titled a chapter in the book, Money... a whole part of the book, Money, Foundation of Society. Because if you build a skyscraper, you don't want to do it on quicksand. And a society is really built on the money, because there's no collaboration in society if there's no money. And with the quality of money decides how stable your economy and how stable your whole society is.
And in the book, you also discuss that Bitcoin could be the next evolution in sound money. Can you elaborate on how Bitcoin addresses some of the historical challenges faced by traditional forms of money like gold and fiat currencies?
From my perspective, the last 5,000 years of human history is really shaped by gold's flaws as a monetary technology, right? Around 5,000 years ago, gold started winning out as the dominant money, or rather gold and silver by metallic standard. And while it was a quite good money, it had several downsides that I go into the book, and where I explain really why these downsides allowed this cycle to into fiat money, out of fiat money, into the gold standard, and on and on and on. And I think Bitcoin really addresses most of these downsides. And what is important for people to understand is that money is a tool. And most people, when they think about money, either they don't think about it at all, or they think about it in, this is gold, I can touch it, it's scarce, and all these properties that make a good currency. But few people actually try and understand what is money, what are you trying to do with it. And in the end, it's a tool, because direct barter transactions don't really work. They're cumbersome, and in a large scale economy, especially a highly technologized one as we have today, it's impossible. So what you need is a tool to defer transactions, right? not we two exchange goods directly, but really we exchange good for money. You exchange the money later with another person in another place. So what money does is transferring a transaction in time, place, and person. And the way you find out if you have a good money or not is really that you receive the money, you spend it, and then you have to try and compare it. Was the money actually a better tool than if I had done direct barter or used another currency? And that's really how you know if you have a good money or not. Only when you have spent it, you know if it worked for you or not.
Yeah. And I can imagine, because there are already existing books, obviously, the Bitcoin Standard and other books, but and these all are also are touching quite the same themas. Is it difficult then to write a book? Or maybe I can ask it this way, is how does your book is different to that book's? Because I can imagine that it's difficult to come up with something new, right?
I mean, actually, I wrote the book because there were several things that nobody really talks about. I touched already on the first part. And the second part that I hinted at but didn't really go into is that I've been, even before I was a Bitcoin, I've been really interested in how can we better organize society. And I read, of course, all the things like Private Cities by Gable and The Network State by Balaji. Actually, the idea for this book was already circling my mind when Balaji published his book. But in the end, I was really disappointed by both these books, because these books were all like really tying it down to some small territorial organization. And especially Balaji in The Network State. Like it's called The Network State. And then he says, okay, we all organize digitally around the globe, buy some land and move there. And I was like, why? What I was have been toying around in my mind is really like, with all the technology we have today, the internet and Bitcoin, of course, is it possible that society organizes in a non-territorial way? And actually, when thinking about it, reviewing everything that's going on, the conclusion I came to is that not only is it possible, but actually it's almost inevitable. Really, I can only see two futures. Either we go into a global Chinese-style communist dictatorship, or we move more and more into free societies where in the end, probably territorial states as they are today don't exist anymore. That's really the only two options that I could logically come up with or really determine as plausible.
It's interesting because my next question touches that. It's the relationship between Bitcoin and democracy as you outline it in your book. And specifically, how might Bitcoin decentralization, because that's what you're talking about, the decentralization nature of Bitcoin, and global reach empower individuals and challenges existing power structures. So to challenge those power structures, you're stating that Bitcoin can really pull it off, right?
Actually, I'm arguing that these power structures, out of self-interest, will adopt Bitcoin and basically
even better
will erode the structures as they are, just because they fight to keep the power as long as possible.
Yeah. So they make themselves obsolete. That's they change from the inside.
Yeah, more or less, yes.
More or less, yeah.
Interesting. But I think with more globalization, you mean that there will be no borders anymore. I mean, we see something already happening in Europe a bit, because we are all nation states, but we can travel through the continent freely if you have a European passport, and you think that it will also be the case for traveling through other continents, or there will be no continents at all. That's what I understand, correct, right?
It depends. I think freedom of movement will be greater, but in the end, I think the borders will still exist, but probably people will more shut themselves off in smaller communities. Like you see today already in gated communities that people say, really, this is our homestead. We just carefully choose who we let in and who not. And I think that's really the nature of democracy. I mean, The Swiss comedian Andreas Thiel once explained that there are only three types of governance, really: anarchy, monarchy, and oligarchy. And really, monarchy is when there's one person that has all the power, and dictatorship is basically a form of monarchy. Oligarchy is what most states have, where several people have power, and anarchy is when nobody has power. And he further explains that democracy really is the only practical form, or so far tried out practical form, of anarchy. And the purpose of democracy really is not to elect a few leaders that are in charge, but the purpose of democracy, and where most historical democracies have failed, is to actually have nobody in charge, right? And I must admit, I do not really believe in full voluntarism. I think that there is things you have to compromise on. There's, and if you compromise with a group of people, voting often is the best choice. But what I think really is necessary to evolve our current democracies to true, pure democracies is that you can actually choose who you let decide what with a vote over you, and that basically you are the true owner of your land, right? That if you have your property, you can choose who your state service provider is, and you can switch that state service provider without relocating and selling your property.
Let's head over to another book, because this is, of course, the latest and very interesting. But you also translated the book with the title The Essence of Money. Can you briefly explain what the book is about and why you started to translate it?
Sorry.
Doesn't matter.
So The Essence of Money is a book by Alfred Landsberg, who was a German banker who wrote under the pseudonym of Argentarius.
Yeah.
And he basically explained money and the economy very understandably to the layman in a form of fictional letters to his son. So he had a son, but these were basically educating letters. And he was one of the few people who predicted the Weimar hyperinflation. And he also, already 2 years before, roughly suggested the solution that then later, when finally implemented in 1923, ended the hyperinflation within 1 week. And I want to translate more of his books, because he's written many, many good books. But really, The Essence of Money was originally a trilogy that is basically his core base work, where he really explains how money works. And later, in 1923, he then also published a book called Währungsnot in Germany. So basically the book where he then, writing while the hyperinflation unfolded, really explained, yeah, this is what I predicted, and here you see it, how it unfolds, and this is how all these processes in the hyperinflation work. And many of the German publications then dropped the third part of the original trilogy and added that as the third one. And I basically wanted to have all these four books that really belong together, and translated them and published them in English. And my cousin translated them to French, and we also published them in French.
Cool. And what are the key takeaways that you think are most relevant to our current economic climate, or particularly in relation to Bitcoin? I mean, it might be a whole, but if you have to light out one or two.
Yeah, already hinted at it. Do not sell yourself poor. Really, when you accept a currency as payment, don't think you're paid when you have received it, but think really, when do you want to spend this and for what? And will it then still have the purchasing power to buy you what you intend to?
Yeah, nice, cool, man.
Hey, interesting.
Enough about the books, because we are already 10 minutes in and we also have to talk about OpaGo. But it was a really nice introduction, get to know you a bit and your history. But you also co-founded OpaGo, a payment provider to merchants, which,
there it is. It's the point of sale.
Product, or the X marks the prototype. This is my prototype that I play around with.
Nice.
And essentially, as you can see here, just has a fiat currency. You enter an amount. It's hard on the head. Then basically it generates an invoice from a server. And then you can pay it either by scanning the QR code or by using a Bolt card.
NFC.
Yeah, so it was NFC enabled also.
Yeah, holding it in the right place, it's not so easy if you see it on your head. No?
It really looks really, really nice.
This is a live demo. Come on, this. Yeah, is
I just tested it before, but I think I
love the might have to do with the skin
with the shitty internet card. Connection that I'm having trouble.
Doesn't
with.
Matter.
I know it's.
But okay, but the people who are
reading it.
Oh yeah, I see it now. Yeah. So the people who are listening to our show on Spotify or something, you really need to look up the video version because. Then you can see it in action.
There it is.
You see that my internet really has troubles today because
that's the bottleneck.
I have a video on Twitter where you see that it really takes normally just a few seconds, but now
cool.
My internet connection is barely able to make this call happen.
Well, we are doing our utmost, and it's going well up until now, so that's perfect. Hey, you guys are a provider for merchants, which enables them to accept Bitcoin payments through the Lightning Network. How and why did you start OpaGo?
I mean, I used to work with a fiat payment terminal provider, supply them with secure micros and secure software stacks. And at the time in Germany, almost no merchant accepted card payments. So I asked all the taxi drivers, really, what are the problems? And some of them were addressed by my former customer, but many not. Really, many still say, hey, you have all these chargebacks, you have these high fees, it takes so long until you get the money, especially the small merchants. And that's something that Lightning resolves. And of course, there are many companies already doing Lightning payments, but talking to people who already accept Lightning payments, what we realize is that actually some cheap and simple to use hardware is missing. Because what you hear most common is that, oh, I went to this restaurant that accepts Bitcoin, but the owner wasn't there with his phone and they couldn't accept Bitcoin. Or
indeed,
the waiter said, oh, this is so complicated. No, please not. And what we are trying to do is basically make it as simple as a fiat POS terminal, right? The waiter doesn't have to know anything about Bitcoin. You just enter an amount, the customer pays, and in the end, we have all the exchange rates, we have a tax report, we have one of our co-founders is a certified German tax advisor. So what we are trying to do is really, for the merchant, make everything as simple as basically foreign currency card transaction on the traditional fiat POS, but with the added benefit that he has his money instantly.
Effortless. So
and because it's fiat by default, right? So so I saw it was in US dollars when you just showed it, so it's by fiat by default. And is it also possible for the merchant to have it in sets?
Yeah, obviously you can set it to sats. The reason we usually have it set to a fiat currency is because most merchants still account in fiat currencies.
Yeah, of course.
Besides Argentina and probably some Swiss cities, and maybe I'm not sure how it is there in El Salvador, almost all governments force you to pay taxes and do your accounting and everything in fiat currency. So the payment is in Bitcoin, but obviously you need an exchange rate and sadly, still, that is measured in fiat currencies.
What are the main goals for OpaGo in terms of being a global player as a Bitcoin payment provider? Or is it only for to start off in Germany?
Yeah, we started off in Germany because the regulatory and tax situation is one of the hardest in the world. And if we can do it here, we really hope to be able to do it everywhere. And also there's a scaling issue, right? We start selling a device for 99 euros at the moment, but that's because we produced a few hundred. And I worked for over a decade in the semiconductor industry, so I know a little bit about these things. And there is a clear path to make this device really affordable if you get to scale. And our goal is to really get this device in the 6 to 7 figures a year in the future and really supply every merchant, especially make it cheap enough that every merchant, even in Africa, South America, or wherever, can afford it. And the big advantage that Lightning has here over the traditional fiat currencies is like the fiat credit cards have very little security, and all the security, or almost all the security, is really in the card reader.
Yeah.
But here, the security is really on the server side, on the node. The device doesn't do much more than display a QR code or really read an NFC card. Sorry. So essentially, the components are all cheap. Of course, as usually, the case of the device, the board, the components, all of them are five times as expensive if you buy a few hundred than if you buy a few hundred thousand.
Yeah, sure.
There is a clear path to really make the thing affordable worldwide and orange pill every merchant.
Hey, and you said it is connected to a node. Is it the merchant's node or is it your node? How did you develop this terminal? How it works?
Yeah, when we ship it, it's not connected yet.
Okay.
So every merchant decides when he receives the hardware what he wants to do with it. He can connect it to his own node. He can connect it to whatever, even to the LMBits demo server if he wants to. So we base this on the groundwork by the amazing LMBits team and by Ben Ark with his LNPOS.
Yep.
So it's interoperable with the API from LMBits. And of course, we also offer a connection to our node.
Okay.
Because most merchants, especially small merchants, they don't want to manage liquidity. They don't want to learn about how to run a node. So we do that. And even if they use our node, we're non-custodial. So we basically require the merchant to have some kind of Lightning wallet for himself, which can be self-custodial, self-custody Lite, or a wallet of Satoshi, or any of the other custodial wallets. We don't really care. What we do is we manage the liquidity that the payments reliably arrive. And as soon as possible, even if the channel briefly fails or something, as soon as possible, lands directly in the merchant's wallet. And normally this is really within seconds. So before the customer has walked out of the shop, the merchant is able to spend the money again.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So this makes it really effortless for merchants. Is this also the way that you orange pill merchants to step into the Bitcoin world and start accepting Lightning payments? Because this obviously sounds like their own terminal, but even easier, right?
Yeah, so the aspiration is to get first to as easy as the fiat terminals and then easier.
Yeah.
And the long-term target we have is we're talking with several partners, working on integrating fiat swaps that essentially, from our side, the merchant can accept whatever. He can get Bitcoin, fiat currency, whatever, we don't care. And it should be there within seconds. And on the other side, lots of people are working on basically making Lightning interoperable with all kind of things. So in the future, I imagine that Lightning will be the transport protocol.
Yeah.
And the customer can pay with fiat, and the merchant can get fiat, and in between there's Bitcoin and Lightning. So really the global settlement layer. And this is, I think, the way also we get to mass adoption, because there's this theory that the hard money is held and the soft money is spent.
Yeah.
So how do we really get the hard money out there? And I think if the hard money becomes the base layer for the soft money, then at some point the soft money can just die out because there's no hard system crash when it does.
Yeah, totally agree, man. I hear the TikTok, that means we're running out of time, but I see one question I would really like to ask you, because you also offer an instant cashback to enable merchants to turn a transaction into a relationship. And yeah, we love this marketing text because it really is appealing in our opinion. But how does this work? And can you also share a great example from your experience? Are there already merchants that work that way?
Yeah, so to be honest, it's not fully in production yet, because there's not all Lightning wallets support it yet. But in essence, what we do is we allow this feature that's in Lightning to attach basically a refund link to the payment. And we then refund a portion of the payment that the merchant can decide. And obviously, a merchant can tie it to conditions like loyalty, like having a link attached that shows the newest offers for merchants or whatever. So that's something we're really working on, or rather we're working on, and the whole community is working on, because it's not enough if just we make it happen. It needs to be broadly supported by all wallets.
Very interesting. We will follow you, of course, along the way, because we're curious about how this will turn a whole community to use this point of sale solution. I think it's a very interesting solution, very easy. So let's hope that it will expand in the future. So thanks again.
Conecta el mundo.
Yeah, we have one question left for you, Michael.
Yeah.
but it has to, you can choose from three. We have one from Second Light. He's from CypherChat and BTCEmap.org. Or Olga Yugolova, she's from RGB. Or Henrik Skokstrom, and he's from Torque, a former Lightning Capital. So which one will it be?
I'll take the last one.
Okay.
Last one. Henrik, here it comes.
Hi, my name is Henrik from Torque, and my question is, how many transactions per second do you think it's possible to do on Lightning today? And how many do you think is possible to do in 5 years?
All of the transactions. I mean, just with our node, I ran a test and ended up doing hundreds of thousands of transactions in a couple hours. And really the limit was not the Lightning node, but actually the shell script that was fetching the invoices. So each node can do millions of transactions per day. There's no limit already, and it gets better and better.
Cool. Let's hope. I mean,
no limits.
We also need liquidity and all, right? So that is the most tricky part, I think. And then liquidity at the right places, but we will get there. And hopefully you guys will be a big part of the future. Because the thing is, in Germany, the cash is always king, right? So still, if I'm correct, a lot of people don't pay with cards or debit cards or credit cards.
It used to. COVID really has changed a lot here, and cool. More and more shops are basically banning cash.
Okay, cool.
And now the EU is also trying to ban cash.
Yeah.
But that's not new. I mean, Argentarius 100 years ago, he wrote, shortly before the money fails, they ask pay cashless. So this is really cashless payments, trying to force people out of cash. Is something that's not new.
It's part of the plan. Let's put it that way. but it's good that you guys are popping up then and doing your work in Germany, and hopefully the rest of Europe following soon. So so thanks, Michael, for doing a hell of a job in reaching that goal. And where can people follow you, man? What's your Twitter, your website?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is Michael Anton F. So like my name, just up till the first letter of the surname. And Opago, you find at opago-pay.com. And I also have the name is michaelantonfisher.com. Also just my name. And on social media, we also have, of course, Twitter and LinkedIn for Opago-pay.
Perfect. Awesome. Thanks again, Michael. And thanks for listening to everybody else. And thanks for all members participating in Stoshi Radio Rings of Fire. And of course, thanks everybody to help us out in Connect the World, because that's our mission. And if you like our content, then please support us in our mission. Visit our website, connecttheworld.live, where you can also donate and subscribe, like, and share our content on your favorite platform. We need you to complete our mission, connect the world. So keep those nodes running, sats flowing, and rings burning. And perhaps use Opago. That would be interesting to see it all work. And see you all next week on the same Lightning channel. Namaste, Michael.
Cheers.